We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
And thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. And coming up, I have an interview with Anthony Coniglio, co-founder, president, and chief executive officer at New Lake Partners. Another great conversation. We're going to go through some comments he made recently at a virtual conference and opportunities and challenges in the sector and the company's strong financial position and potential for growth despite current undervaluation. But first, Blunt Business is presented by The Buzz CRM. TheBuzzCRM.com. Stop juggling multiple marketing tools and ditch expensive subscriptions because The Buzz CRM, I've told you about this for months, all-in-one solution. There's 500 modules in this thing. 500 modules. And there are all these different CRM softwares and service platforms that you use all the time. But what do you have to do? You have to log into all these different sites, pass along passwords, lack of privacy, access, time-consuming. Okay, imagine AI handling your email, social media, personalized workflows, and connecting with customers everywhere. I know because I'm using AIs all the time. Never miss a lead with our unique missed call text back feature. The Buzz CRM has you covered with a single affordable plan. Get more bang for your buck and boost your ROI. You can also get ready. We're going to be announcing our Under the Hood introductory webinars to explore the platform's capabilities firsthand. You'll get to go and find out what it's like because people are asking for it. By popular demand, we're going to give you webinars. We're going to take time, show you how everything works, how the bread is made. Isn't that what you want? So find out for yourself the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM, built with you in mind, more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. It's a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, gives you tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. I don't need this anymore. Go do it. TheBuzzCRM.com. Go right now. It's a low barrier to entry. TheBuzzCRM.com. Go ahead and find out more today. Well, that said, now, I want to get talk about last week, New Lake Capital Partners, which, by the way, on the OTC markets, you can find them listed as NLCP. They participated in the Sidoti Small Cap Virtual Conference, and Anthony Coniglio, who's my guest today, had a strategic overview of New Lake's role as a real estate capital provider to the cannabis industry. And Anthony, welcome onto the program.
Thank you very much for having me back. I'm excited to catch up with you. It's been a little while.
Absolutely. It's one of those things where, I mean, I can always get you in other areas when it comes to the financial part. Oh, we could talk, say, banking. I talked about somebody else earlier today. There's just, I'll put it like this. Everything right now, I feels like just at a standstill. No movement from DC. And I feel there's a stagnation right now that the industry's feeling when I just go through the stories. And I'm talking to the host or guests here on the program. It's what I feel right now. That's what I feel what the industry is. But that's not the feeling what you have at New Lake. So if you could give me a quick overview of what you feel like, how you feel like you're circumventing the current narrative of the industry right now, and they're maybe a little bit of a killjoy they have at this point.
Well, thank you again for having me. I'd actually say I think there are maybe two sides to the coin that you just threw up. One is what you said resonates with me about not a lot happening. And then we have some stuff happening at New Lake. I recently posted on X that I haven't been posting very much. I put up a post by saying there's not a lot to really talk about. And so I'm not going to post on stuff I don't know about, but everybody know I'm still here. But yeah, Blue Lake, we've been, we did a new transaction for Cresco, a dispensary for Cresco in the first quarter. We announced our quarterly earnings. We're here for the long haul in this industry. Our portfolio has a weighted average duration of over 13 years remaining. So we're here and we're in this industry for the long term. And in our business, the ebbs and flows in terms of the volume. Some quarters could be busy, some quarters it's nothing at all. But we're here and we're a part of this industry and we're excited for the future.
And it's always been like that. So every time we've had you on, it's always been because there have been some new headlines coming out there to be talked about. So first of all, in this particular small cat virtual conference, which you spoke on, you emphasized the strength of your portfolio and the tenant base. So, and I'm really, I don't want to give that understanding. Elaborate on key performance indicators for me. And I use them to assess tenant health and what strategies are in place to proactively address any potential challenges tenants might face in the evolving market.
Yeah, it's been a very difficult period for the last couple of years in the cannabis industry. Our portfolio snapshot, as we sit here today, we own 33 properties across 12 states with 13 tenants. Our top three tenants would be Curaleaf, Cresco, and Trulieve. We also have other MSOs as well as single state operators below the top three. The key metric that we focus on is AFFO, or available funds from operations. So as a REIT, as a real estate investment trust, we're collecting rent on a monthly basis and we're paying out a dividend to our investors on a quarterly basis. And that AFFO is the measure of our free cash flow. And what we put out is an AFFO payout ratio. That's the percentage of our free cash flow that we pay out in the dividend. And our fourth quarter AFFO payout percent was 83%. We announced that we target between, since we IPO'd the business in 2021, we target between 80 and 90%. Mm-hmm. What that really means, the inverse, is that 17% of our revenues can go away and we can still have enough cash flow to cover our dividend. And so when we look at the quality of our portfolio, we've been paying out between that 80 to 85% now for a number of years. And we think we're very well positioned to be able to withstand the difficult operating environment. It's not as if we're pitching perfect baseball here or playing perfect baseball in the spirit of the preseason. But I'd say if you look at our portfolio, the durability of the cash flows and the quality of the tenants and the properties, I'd put it up against anybody else's.
Now, also, you discussed your disciplined capital allocation strategy. I mean, when there's only so much availability of money or financing or investment that's available right now as we speak with the regulations that you have. But give me more detail on any specific criteria you're using right now to evaluate now more potential real estate investments in the cannabis sector. I know we talked about this before, and the criteria mm-hmm. might involve in response to regulatory changes like rescheduling. So we already know that rescheduling, I think I've heard from enough legal counsel now on this show this year, other financial folks that are CEOs, they're just saying, yeah, 2025, just throw it out the window. Rescheduling is not going to be effective. And so if you're looking for tax revenue to be, you know, for write-offs to go ahead and put into your 2025 tax preparation, forget about it. Or even for the quarterly, don't even worry about it until next year. If it's going to happen, we don't know, because we have a suspension indefinitely of any future hearings right now from the DEA about it. So we don't have that. Safe banking we talked about, and the fact that, you know, oh, they keep presenting something towards a possible bill that could be presented to Congress. Some Congress people are talking about it vocally in committee, you know. So it's nothing more than just happenstance, you know, happy talk, and just nothing else is happening right now. So it's what you have in the coffers and what you're able to continue to do to strategically go after new properties. So what can you tell me about going through this environment and you're still looking to go and allocate?
Yeah, a few points there. Number one, totally agree with you that we don't see any reform really meaningfully happening in the near term. And so we're certainly managing our business in that manner. And we never at all underwrote transactions expecting reform to occur. If it occurs, we view that as a positive upside. You know, in terms of what's been, what's different with our underwriting approach, quite frankly, not a heck of a lot. We think our underwriting approach, where we focus on limited license jurisdictions and properties that have quality property level cash flow. People may have heard me refer to this as our EBITDAR coverage, EBITDA plus rent, EBITDAR coverage. We think that those focus of our underwriting approach has served us well, and we haven't really modified it. If anything, we think the last 2 years have validated utilizing that approach to generate returns, quality returns for investors.
Now, as I mentioned, the rescheduling issue, and I kind of prompted a little bit early, but you also talked about the potential impact of rescheduling on cannabis. So let's just, again, and I imagine at the Sidoti conference, they might have had, you know, some, was it constructive optimism? Of course, I mean, we are optimistic about it. And that's fine. You want to be glass half full, that's okay. But we're going to go and just be honest here. We're both thinking not this year. Fine. But what does that mean now for the demand for cannabis real estate, whether it's cultivation, manufacture, retail, and, you know, knowing that that's not going to be in place, you know, how much of that changes the focus on investment?
Yeah, I would say that our investment cycle is very much tied to what you would call the CapEx cycle of the industry. And the industry isn't really in a big CapEx cycle right now because the turn-ons, the state turn-ons, whether it's a new medical program or a new adult use program, are somewhat muted versus where we were a couple of years ago with, say, Illinois coming online, people getting excited about New York, whether or not that, you know, we all know that that was a disaster of a rollout, but New Jersey coming on, Maryland and other states. So now the only real new state you have right now is Kentucky. Unfortunately, we didn't get Florida at the ballot box last year. So it really is Kentucky. And in the states that have launched adult use, like in Ohio, last year, you've seen some build out, but by and large, that market was developed. And so all that's to say, we're in a slower CapEx environment, which means there'll be less demand for the capital that we do have available to deploy and allows us to be just as careful as we've been in previous years.
Now, were you surprised with Florida because of the fact that, you know, I kept predicting last year, I mean, of course, I'm in Florida, I'm in West Palm Beach, and I kept looking at, you know, as regardless of the fact that the Trulieve backed Smart and Safe Florida campaign, it was out there, was definitely visible. I think they could have done some more in trying to get to a younger demographic because that's who really came out of the ballot box this past year for the presidential. It was the right time for it. Everything was done. I mean, you got the petition was all set up. Everything was all set. 2.3% away from getting the supermajority, and it would be adult. And I thought it was going to be that close. Did you have any thoughts that it was going to be that Florida was going to be in play prior to this? And did that make a lot of changes at your firm about what would go on about looking at Florida?
Yeah, it didn't make any changes because, again, we never expect stuff to happen. So we certainly didn't change. Listen, I was on the record as saying I thought it was going to be close. I could have seen it going anywhere from 62% approval all the way to 56% approval. I thought it was a toss-up. And, you know, with these things, there are so many times where people say, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. If there's one thing we've learned in this cannabis industry, is you can't predict these events, whether it's regulatory reform or even some of these ballot initiatives. You know, would you have, on the flip side, would you have predicted that in Kentucky with, I think it was a roughly 102 cities and counties went to the ballot box in November to vote if they wanted to allow cannabis businesses to operate in their area?
Right.
This is the epitome of NIMBY. And so even though the state legalized it, I think some people were expecting that there'd be quite a few localities that opted out like we had seen in other states. And Kentucky being a state that Donald Trump carried handily.
Oh, yeah.
Well, lo and behold, every single one of those counties and cities that went to the ballot box approved allowing cannabis businesses to operate there. And some of them approved it in excess of 70%. Oh, yeah. So who would have thought that? I wouldn't have predicted that kind of run of the table, if you will, for Kentucky. So these things are just so hard to predict. Best you could do is look at the data surrounding it and just call it for what it is, a guess.
You know, so I think the other thing was in the play for Florida was that of the congressional amendments, abortion was on there for Florida, which was going to make a different, the scope of the turnout was going to be different as well. And you can see that was something because that was really pushed hard in this state. And that's also superseded anything in cannabis. Cannabis was a second issue. And then when the governor decides to go ahead and make comments about it, well, yeah, they're just kind of, I mean, he would have signed it. He wouldn't have pushed back, I think, on it if the people would have voted on it, but that's what happens. But I still...
He pushed hard against it, very hard against it.
But I think still, but there was not a lot of campaign to push back against Martin City, Florida. That wasn't pushed. I really saw very little. If they did, I didn't even like the ads that they did. Honestly, I didn't like any of the cannabis ads this year or this last year when they even put it out there on the ballot. I think... Could have done. I would have loved to have been part of that and just say, no, you got to go. Stop trying to go after medical patients that are already on the course. You need to get adult use. That should have been something more. But regardless, it's a market that we all want. I mean, I know that when you look at it, you see potential in that market. How much potential do you see if it does open up?
Yeah, for Florida, we estimated that that market would have grown significantly over the next 3 years, potentially doubling, if not more, over the next few years. A lot of people, I think, were right in pointing out the tourism and the amount of business that would come through the tourism that happens in Florida. And so, yeah, it was a real disappointment. But like many things in cannabis, what I tell our investors is I fundamentally believe that reform will occur. And I'll explain in a minute why I have the fundamental belief, but it's just taking longer than any of us want. And so from an investment perspective, if your investment can withstand that time horizon, that uncertain time horizon, then I think you're in a good position to gather those returns. And so why I fundamentally believe reform will occur is because what is blocking reform today is typically not the voter, it's typically the legislator. And so with Ron DeSantis running as hard as he did against that, if he just sat on the sideline, because there were some compelling points that he made, which was, we don't want this to smell like New York City when you walk out. I don't think anybody wants that, no. Right? People want to have that regulated consumption. In any event, my point is that once you get the legislators out there and you let the will of the people happen, you look at the Gallup polls or you look at the Pew Research polls, yeah, they've consistently shown significant support across all political factions. And there's not many things in this country that we agree to as a people by greater than 60%.
Oh, yeah.
And that's cannabis, adult use cannabis. Medical use is up over 90%. So, you know, when you get those types of numbers, the voters want it. It's just a matter of getting the legislators in there that will accede to what the voters want. And quite frankly, when I hear the prohibitionists, and I hate to be ageist, I'm 56, so I hate to be ageist, but you know, some of these federal legislators tend to be from a different generation, yeah, that I think will be really hard for them to come around. So it's just going to take time. But I do believe fundamentally it will happen for Florida. It will happen for Texas. It will be decriminalized in the U.S. I just don't know how long it's going to take. Not this year, but it will happen.
Well, it's a testament to Florida being also very culturally diverse, because when you look at North, Central, South Florida, if you just took South Florida, that would have been a supermajority. Even the last time we had the medical on the ballot in 2016 when it passed. And that was really what put it across the finish line. It would have been the same thing here, but, you know, again, it's the way you campaign. It's also, I don't know how if they went ahead and targeted it specifically for North and Central and South Florida, but they should have. But again, that's another story for another day. They'll have to go back 4 years and try it again. They got to wait 4 years to even do it again. So we're going to go ahead and come back with more questions with Anthony Coniglio, co-founder, president, CEO of New Lake Capital Partners. And I'm going to talk to you about long-term growth strategy. Well, I want to go and talk to you about when it comes to real estate, property valuations, and really, you know, in this volatile stock market environment, what institutional interest is out there? We're going to talk about that in a little bit more with Anthony here on Blunt Business, and we'll do that after a short break. Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Anthony Coniglio, co-founder, president, and CEO of New Lake Capital Partners, and I was really looking at right now just at my portfolio recently, and you know, there's following along and just seeing, okay, the volatility is still there. We got inflation that's trying to be corrected, and we're not.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
A correction right now, still in a bull market environment. Gold price is over $3,000. Like everybody's kind of just like holding on to like clutching the pearls right now, clutching the gold bars as we speak. But this is obviously can still be a very opportunistic environment for institutional investment. So, Anthony, I want to go ahead and just get your take on what there is about this current environment in terms of if there is. You know, any key factors driving valuations in the sector? And do you think there's some increased institutional investor interest right now? Is that a competitive advantage for firms like yours? How do you look at it? Do you look at it a different way around?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of institutional participation at all in our sector right now. And, you know, it's also interesting. People will look at a stock price and they'll say, oh, the market is saying this, the market is saying that. And I think by and large, that's absolutely true of large mid caps and even some small caps, but not in this sector. And the reason I say that is it comes down to custody. And anybody that's heard me talk before about the issues front and center for this industry, to me, it is all about the custody of the securities that is keeping the institutional investor away. They can't gain access. So in a world right now where if they did have access, we'd be talking about the opportunity set. Is there an alternative opportunity? Will institutions allocate capital to higher growth industries? Will institutions allocate capital to thematic or defensive industries versus cannabis? I don't even think that's at play here because of the limited institutional participation driven by these restrictions on custody. And so we're going to need those restrictions to get lifted to really be able to get a sense for what institutions want to do here with cannabis and how are they viewing it in the context of the alternative investment landscape. Because one thing to remember is I'm sure you do in your own portfolio, you look at the landscape of investments and you make a decision on where you think you will get the best return. And it could be in crypto. It could be in the transportations. It could be in the bank sector. It could be in the cannabis sector. But again, without custody, cannabis just isn't even on the list of alternatives for most of these institutional investors.
Yeah.
But therein lies the opportunity, right? Because to the extent that retail investors, where we at NewLake have been spending a lot of time lately, to the extent retail investors can step in front of that institutional demand, and then when the custody changes and the institutional demand can come into the sector, well, then hopefully we'll see appreciation in stocks and bonds as that demand goes up and the supply stays consistent.
New Cannabis Ventures reporting from last year, 2024, that their global cannabis stock index went down 15.2% for the year, and it's still continuing to go down now. Is there a bottoming out we're still waiting for? Because that's where I think investors are going to they're just waiting to see what they can get the cheapest price, because is there a bottom out coming up soon? I mean, how far do you think it could continue to go ahead and drop?
Wow. You know, so I have two comments here.
Yeah.
Number one, in the past month, I've had two people say, I think we're at the bottom. And then within 24 to 48 hours, the industry took another leg down. So I don't think anybody should be talking about bottoms here. Who knows? The other point I wanted to make was, and I apologize, I just lost my other point by distracting myself with a disappointment. I just think that the liquidity on these stocks, when you see the amount of trading that actually occurs, it is minuscule, just minuscule. You can pick a stock and you could find that it only trades $75,000 a day or $100,000 a day. That is really not very liquid at all. And so I don't think we're seeing any sort of price discovery occur. And I think what's happening for some of these stocks is a discounting of what's going to occur with the refinancing that has to happen for debt that's due. And we've seen with recent examples that in a world where there's no new capital coming in, particularly on the debt side, or no meaningful new capital coming in, to the extent that notes and bonds need to be extended, one of the only things organizations have to offer is equity, and that dilutes the existing shareholders. I think we've seen it happen enough in this industry where people are diminishing their bid for those equities with the expectation of potential dilution.
I'm looking right now at the bar chart, and looking at the cannabis stocks currently as they're trading. And if I just look at the year to year, some of this is just a bloodbath. I'm so sorry. 61% down for Incanix. I'm looking at 49% down for Tilray Brands. This is year to date. And I'm just looking at it, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is just really a cannabis growth down 57%. Like, just. That's the thing. For me, I know there's going to be a point where we're going to see the upswing, but like, that's the thing. I think we're just waiting for that bottom out. I'm looking forward, because if I can get on there on the low end, I'll jump in on the prices, because those prices for shares now, they look very that's a good way to jump in. And you know, it's like riding the COVID wave. You get back to that and get a nice investment back once you know regulations coming in. You know, just how many years you want to wait and how much you want to put in.
Yeah, so that could be, right? And I think you hit on the key, which is how many years do you want to wait,
right?
And what your liquidity needs are. And as long as you have that time horizon to wait, I think you could be well served, as long as your investment can withstand the potential dilution to the extent that that's somebody you're invested in. But the other point, you know, in terms of bottoming out, I go back to this perspective that cannabis is a different sector. In other sectors that are very well traded, the quote-unquote bottoming out occurs when the institutional demand decides that it's just too cheap to not buy. Well, here, we don't have that bid. And the other point, I remember the other point I wanted to make that's related to this, which is, who are the new buyers? There are very few new buyers. And so what I think you end up seeing more and more in this sector is that it's the existing investor that digs deep into their pocket to average down because it's, quote unquote, just too good at this price. So I don't know that it's a significant amount of new institute or new demand at all, retail earnings, any demand. I don't think it's a large amount of new investors coming in saying, finally, this is the right price for me to get in. Because when I talk to people who've not invested in the sector yet, usually they start with, yeah, I have a friend who just got taken to the cleaners with their cannabis investments. Everybody has a story about people who've lost significant amounts in investing in the cannabis sector. And that makes others who haven't yet stepped in very hesitant to deploy capital to the sector. So I come back to the point of, I just don't think there's a ton of new investment dollars coming in. It's just people who are in the industry averaging down and digging deep into the pockets.
It was an interesting story. We never got to talk about this last time around, but this is really interesting, just this concept that cannabis dispensaries increase home values by 2%, 2 percentage points on average. So anybody wasn't going to look at property. And if you're looking to go and buy, you know, properties now, again, for allocation, you look at the fact of the valuations of where they are. And I just want to know if that's something of a contributing factor, not just the fact of, okay, you know, people are moving into certain areas, what is available now, because prices, I don't know if they can stay as high as they can for business related properties or for, you know, residential. Like, it's still high. Inflation's still there. But the thing is, the valuation of some of these properties is up, whether just based on where it's located, plus the fact that the homes around them, if it's the right neighborhood, that's also helping the price of the home buys.
I don't buy it, to use the pun.
You did a lot of talking about it, which is like, I don't know.
No, it's data. What, okay. I get it. But, you know, and I love data and I love analyzing data. But what I realize is you have to be able to peel apart what is causal and what is incidental. And so we've seen property appreciation in this country occur. Now, one would have to study the normalized property appreciation for an area with and without cannabis dispensaries or in that particular state. You know, who knows? Maybe it's up 2% where there's dispensaries. Perhaps it's up 4% where there's not dispensaries. Who knows? I mean, you really need to get behind the data. I don't see any quite frankly, I just don't see any empirical reason why the location of a dispensary would drive up the value of one's home. If anything, it increases traffic. And when you get a property that's closer to a high traffic area, usually it diminishes. Again, depending on it, it's a very general statement. So I don't know. I don't buy it at the end of the day.
Yeah. I also want to ask before we go to break about access to capital financing. So we mentioned briefly, I kind of gleaned over the Safe Banking Act and other issues where banking relief from, you know, DC is not going to be coming. But we know there's a lot of companies still in the financial sector for cannabis that you get a lot of banking experts that are still influxing, making their way into the space with decades of experience, trying to find their way to go and give as much relief or as much, you know, banking options as possible. So wanted to know about how you're navigating the financing landscape and strategies you're using to ensure access to capital for both New Lake and its tenants.
Yes, we have a $90 million credit facility from a group of three banks. These are larger regional banks. We've had that in place for 3 years now, and we have two. It's a five-year facility, so we have 2 years, a little over 2 years remaining on it. So we very much have access to capital. We only have $7.6 million outstanding on that line. So we have $83 million of available capacity plus the $20 million on our balance sheet. So we have over $100 million of liquidity here at New Lake Capital Partners. In terms of banks coming in, we've seen some banks exit. We've seen a couple of banks come in. I would say what washes out net is only a marginal increase in the capacity that I see is available from the banking industry to this sector right now. I would not describe it as a wave of new investment. I'd say that the players that have come to the fore, one or two that maybe went away and then reemerged, they're replacing those that have gone away and maybe a little bit more than that, but it's not a lot in my opinion.
Two words for the next segment, risk mitigation, risk management. We're going to talk about that and more with Anthony Coniglio, co-founder, president, and CEO of New Lake Capital Partners here on Blunt Business. Website is newlake.com, newlake.com. And as I mentioned earlier, you can also trade with them. OTC markets, you can find them listed as NLCP. Back with final questions after this. We're on the home stretch right now. Final questions here with Anthony Coniglio, co-founder, president, CEO of New Lake Capital Partners. Website is newlake.com. And finally, I want to ask about risk management and risk mitigation. So it's been funny where I've talked to, you know, several insurance companies. I've talked to legal counsel and just the areas of risk mitigation because of the fact that when I talk to the folks at Hub International, and the fact that they say that with some of these companies and the level of policies that they have that really cover the bare minimum of risk and, you know, any kind of circumstances for, you know, if they get penalized for whatever reason, they're going to get wiped out. They're not even going to survive. Compliance issues, the same thing goes where there's only so much being put into investment for compliance and for regulation standards to cover just the bare minimum. And that's partly a financial, you know, issue for these companies to be able to go ahead and withstand, you know, not making enough money, not making enough to go ahead and continue to invest upon, hoping for other release to go ahead and allow, say, DEA rescheduling to bring in the tax write-off money that they can reinvest if they want to, or something else. But at this moment, we don't have it. So we just want to get you looking into primary risks associated with investing in cannabis real estate and specific risk mitigation strategies that New Lake employs to protect the investments.
Yeah, it's actually a critical part of the business. We talked earlier about some of the elements of our underwriting approach, but once you do a deal, you have to be able to collect the rent, and the duration of these leases on our cultivation facilities could be 15 to 20 years. And so it is certainly not a set it and forget it type of approach. And in fact, we've taken a proactive approach to the portfolio over the last few years. One example was about 2 years ago, one of our tenants, we had secured a location for a tenant in Massachusetts, and we were going to provide capital for them to retrofit this building to be a cannabis cultivation facility. In the course of the transaction and acquiring the property and bidding out all the work, we observed that the Massachusetts market was becoming much more difficult and was much more difficult than when that tenant decided they wanted to get into it. We approached them and we said, do you really want to do this and build this out in Massachusetts? Or should we take this capital and redeploy it to another one of your projects? And so we did. We sold the property at the amount that we purchased it for. Had we taken a loss, they would have reimbursed us. And we took the capital that we were giving them for Massachusetts and deployed it to a facility in Arizona that recently went operational. And so there we were able to mitigate risk. A couple of other examples where we have dispensaries and we have 33 properties, 18 of them were dispensaries. Well, guess what? Not every retail location is going to be a great one. And we understand that. And so what we've had is our tenants, in one case, the retail location just wasn't performing the way they expected from a revenue and cash flow perspective. And in another one, when a state went from medical use to adult use, The local city wasn't allowing them to open for adult use sales. In both cases, the common element was lower cash flow at the property level than any of us wanted. And we want a successful tenant so they can pay the rent. So we work with them to move that dispensary to somewhere else, right, do a deed swap or sell the property in a way that preserves the value for our shareholders. And actually, I'd say enhances the value of the investment for our shareholder. And so we very much are proactive in talking to our tenants monthly. Almost every one of our tenants, we're having conversations with them monthly. We get reporting on a quarterly basis from the property level. So we're understanding what those cash flow profiles look like. And to the extent that we see cash flow diminishing, we can have that proactive conversation to mitigate the risk of any continued deterioration.
And I can imagine with those many tenants that you have, because I mean, again, that portfolio and all those properties and all those tenants, to have that consistent communication to make sure that everything's all the up and up. So it's got to be, I mean, that's quite a bit of resources and quite a bit of manpower to get that done. Yeah. So the staffing is definitely there. So again, website is newlake.com. And real quickly, we want to go ahead and let people go ahead and know how they can get involved with you. And, you know, for those who want to go connect with you and your team about possibly getting into a chance to go ahead and be part of that portfolio, what should they be doing?
Yeah, you could certainly, people can visit our website, as you pointed out, newlake.com. From an investor perspective, there is an investor tab. I talked about custody earlier. Under the About Our Company, there is a tab that says where people can buy our stock. And we actually list, I think there's 10 or 12 brokers out there that we've heard from investors, they've been able to successfully buy shares. Names like a Fidelity or a Charles Schwab or StoneX or an Interactive Brokers would be on that list. So people can look at where they buy their stock and find it there. And then for organizations that have real estate and want to talk to our team about a transaction, there's also a page on our website, what do we do and who we are. And you could reach out to us through info@newlake.com. And someone will get back to you on that front.
Fantastic. And as I look at it today, I will not say anything more than just say that it's on the upswing today. So that's a good news. And Anthony Caniglia, once again, president, co-founder and CEO of Newlake Capital Partners. As always, we'll keep the door open for you. And, you know, things like this, we just continue to go and get you on board. And we love your insight on all this right here when it all comes to financial investment. And we'll definitely have the door open to bring you on back.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I love these conversations. You bring a breath of fresh air and you even had one of our directors on recently. It was a great episode with Dina Rollman. We love having her involved in our business. It's a key part of our underwriting is having industry insiders who really understand the cannabis industry as part of our organization.
Yeah, Dina was fantastic. There was just so much to go and take away from that interview. And, you know, the first thing I asked was about the fact that she joined the board of directors. And there was a lot being said in terms of, we talked about AI regulation. We talked about the future of cannabis retail. It was so much insight from her that I got.
It's a great episode.
Yeah. So definitely go back and look back for that. But one want to say it was in February we had that episode. But yeah, make sure to go and check for that after you hear this interview with Anthony. And come back next time for another Blunt Business. We'll talk to you again. We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Are you looking for legit ways to make extra money? Our friends at The Side Hustle Show have put together this cool free 60-second quiz to help you do just that. All you got to do is go to hustle.show. You can do it right from your phone. Answer a few short multiple choice questions, and it'll recommend a few episodes of the hit Side Hustle Show podcast to start with. You can add your personalized Side Hustle Show playlist to your device, learn what works, and start making more money today. Again, that's at hustle.show, or follow the award-winning Side Hustle Show in your favorite podcast app.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.